On today's episode of The Good Word, Monica McNutt joins us to talk NBA free agency. And of course, you know she has some WNBA hot takes. Kevin Durant talks with me about his basketball mortality and those trade rumors from draft night. And Stephen Curry discusses his future in Golden State. All that and much more on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. If you're on YouTube, you've probably seen a few videos. You're going to hear a couple of interviews that I did in Las Vegas with Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. But for right now, we got this jam-packed show with the Riddler, Monica McNutt, my homie. Knicks radio analyst for ESPN New York. And of course, you see her on First Take. You see her on Get Up. You see her doing everything. Monica, well, where the hell were you last night? Where were you yesterday?
Man. First of all, kudos to you, because I just want everybody to know that before Vinny got to that intro and got very serious on us, we were kikiing, laughing, and joking abundantly. So I'm glad you brought the Riddler in, because I was like, oh, wait, we got to sit up straight and like, do this. Today's Monday. We're recording this Monday, 11:30 Eastern, 11:20 Eastern. I was in Vegas yesterday for Dallas versus Vegas. Asia Wilson becomes the franchise leading scorer on alumni night. It was poetic and beautiful, and the Aces got back to winning after losing to the Sparks on Friday. And we all agree that Red Eyes now are like out of necessity and not like just because.
Oh, no, that changed when you hit 30.
For sure. I will say, if you get a chance to do a lie flat situation, that has given me some wiggle room. But Vegas to New York yesterday, first class was first class, but it was not comfortable. And so here we are. And I'm here because I love you, though, and we got all things to talk about real quick before I disappear for the rest of the summer, because I'm getting married.
Monica is getting married in August, and we will still call her Monica McNutt, because that other one just don't hit the same. Monica McNutt rolls off the tongue. You know what I mean?
It is so crazy now, Vinny. Like, I was walking through the arena in New York and at women's basketball events in particular and other places. But, like, people aren't like, Monica. People are like, oh, Monica McNutt. Like, oh, that's Monica McNutt. And my friend B. Terrell, or Angel Gray was with me and B. Terrell. They both looked at me and were like, I just love that it's the full name. And I'm like, chill.
The full name. They want to make sure that you're not just any old Monica. It is Monica McNutt.
I appreciate the love, though, truly.
Hey, you go viral. You're a star. You do analysis, and you do the Daily Show. We're going to get to all of that, because
all the things,
because Monica's a star, and I'm so glad that she finds time to do, you know, our little podcast here. She's like legit one of my favorite people in the world. So I'm like really happy that you're here. Means a lot to me. There we go. Enough of this sappy stuff. Like, we had dinner last week or the week before. We got all in the feels.
Truly. It was a good time. It was a good
conversation. All in these uncomfortable conversations and shit. But we're gonna get to the start of the news of the day. I'm in Las Vegas for USA basketball. They're gonna play Canada on Wednesday, whatever that day is. But in the news, Giannis leads Greece to his first Olympic berth in 16 years. He got a little emotional yesterday. Like, you wonder about how much these things mean to guys. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you think the NBA Finals is like the pinnacle. But for someone like Giannis, even getting Greece to the Olympic Games, not even talking about a medal, that hits a player like that, in, like we just said, the feels.
Yeah. First of all, I can't wait to hear the interviews, I shouldn't say just sound, because regular reporters can get sound, but NBA insiders and lead reporters
Here you go. Goodwill, here get interviews.
But to that end, because, we're in a season of our life where we give folks our flowers because whatever. I've always appreciated the relationship that you spend time to build with these guys, Vinny. And even the way that you talk about them. Yes, we could talk about the basketball. And yes, we could talk about your limited left hand and your terrible three-point shooting. But you never skip out on, like, the humanity of it all, right? And so, obviously, I am so here for athletes getting emotional, because I think we really need to be reminded that is a whole human being who just happens to excel at a sport that we love and make money that most of us just dream about. But at the same time, like, the human experience is the thing that should connect us all with the base levels of respect. And so for me, yeah, it's been a checkered couple of years since that finals victory for Giannis, right? And so to see him have a moment like that, it tugs at your heartstrings. And I think we are reminded, I'm constantly trying to remind people, winning and excellence and sustaining either is so hard. It's so hard.
It's not just hard. It takes a lot out of you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize a lot of times winning is more relief than it is exuberance or joy and everything else. And the other stuff is misery. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't even get the highs out of winning as much as you get the lows out of losing. Like, losing sucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, losing legit sucks. And even for the Bucks, because I don't know if you've seen Monica, they haven't done anything this offseason.
I have not seen anything, to your point. Yes.
They have seen them
and the Clippers. What y'all doing? It's not like y'all going backwards.
What time is it? Is that the Judge Judy thing?
Yes.
It's them. It's the Bucks. Miami's done nothing this offseason besides re-sign Bam and not signing Jimmy to an extension. I'm trying to figure out, do these teams know that the Eastern Conference, at least the top of the Eastern Conference, is getting better and getting further away from you? Like, Milwaukee knocked out in the first round because Giannis was hurt. Dame hadn't been in shape. Chris Middleton was hurt. And Miami, Jimmy was out. They got knocked out in the first round by Boston. Like, do they not see that the Eastern Conference is passing them by even more?
Yeah. I think I'm more concerned about Milwaukee than I am Miami.
Okay.
I think, tell me if you buy this, I think somewhere in the Milwaukee mindset is the actual first year under Doc with Dame, with Giannis, and I guess they're going to punt on what we saw last year, and health.
Yes.
Because I swear, I'm a loyal listener of The Good Word, but last year during the postseason in Vegas, and you did that episode talking about guys' age, and it was like sneaky, Giannis is not like 26. He's got miles and he's got injuries. And so I think we haven't truly seen a healthy Giannis practically since that finals. So I think there's some hope there in terms of maybe he and Dame getting healthy and Doc really implementing his system. Even though that sounds like a high bar and major potential if realized, I'm actually less worried about Miami just because I have respect for their culture. Like, whatever. If they're going to be healthy, they can go find somebody that ain't nobody draft from a country we can't recognize, or from some team, you know what I'm saying, like D3 team, and just churn them out.
It's amazing that they keep doing it, and we just naturally give them this trust that they've earned, right? Completely earned. Like, Eric Spoelstra is one of Steve Kerr's assistants for a reason. Like, he and Ty Lue, to me, are the best two coaches in basketball, and it ain't that close and all that stuff. But just because you got a great coach, Clippers and Heat, give these guys something besides these butter knives to work with. Like, hey, you can have a steak. You can't eat the steak if you got butter knife.
Jeez.
Maybe if I was really hungry, I would eat a steak.
One time in Chicago, I asked a lady for a butter knife at this cute little breakfast spot. She said, baby, our steak's so soft, you should be able to cut it with that. She was right.
Word?
But that steak was good. It was a little breakfast spot. It was thinner, but it was good. Anyway, I digress, because I was like, this is the first I'm cutting steak with a butter knife. Wow.
You're going to have to, hey, I'm going to be in Chicago for NABJ next month. You're going to have to give me the name of this place.
Oh, it was a little hole in the wall next to the hotel when we were there with the Knicks. I'm going to find it. That was cute.
Appreciate that. Now, DeMar DeRozan, speaking of Chicago, leaving the Bulls, sign and trade 3-74 to go signing with the Sacramento Kings. On its face, it validates the Kings a little bit more, right? You get
100%.
A veteran that comes there. On the floor, I'm wondering who's going to create space. Sabonis, De'Aaron, DeRozan, they all occupy that lower third of the floor. And I'm wondering how that's going to work practically.
I literally, when this went down, I texted my fiance and I'm like, I know it's the middle of the summer and I got like travel brain, but does Sabonis shoot threes? I can't remember.
No.
Exactly. I was like, that's why I can't remember.
Nope.
I'm with you. But I also think Mike Brown is one of the underrated coaches in the league. And so I had Knicks in Sacramento. I think I had a Sacramento game for ESPN in Philly. They, to me, are... Now, this is where it's tricky, because we don't think of DeMar DeRozan typically when we think of a team trying to play fast.
Mm.
But I think there's a window in there that if they can play with space, and I know we typically don't like it to be your turn, my turn, but if they could play with pace, I think it's going to create the space, if that makes sense. Because De'Aaron wants to get out and run. Malik opted to stay, right? Like, he could play quick. I think DeMar DeRozan and Sabonis, we pin these guys into how they play, and sometimes I think we forget to take a step back and look at what they have to do with said organization.
Right.
This would be the most help he's had since Lonzo and Zach and them was healthy when they first got there.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? And so there's still a first dribble and an attack getting to the rim if he so desires. Yes, both he and Sabonis can probably take advantage of mismatches with bigger guards. But I would think of DeMar as more of a true three and Sabonis is that undersized four. So I trust that Mike Brown will be able to cook it up. And it's going to have to go through Foxy, who had his big time clutch player year, kind of regressed to the mean a little bit, but I still think there's a lot there.
Well, you said it. It's about the space that you operate too. DeMar makes a lot of his money on that baseline.
Yeah.
You turn away from double teams, and that means there's also space on the weak side of the floor where you're going to have your Keegan Murrays and the Malik Monks and all those other guys creating space for you. It may not be Fox and Sabonis creating space, but there will be space, and it's just up to you to sort of like optimize that. And Sabonis is just a tough son of a gun, too. I don't think we give that dude the credit for being like legit elbow in your grill tough. Like, he ain't no softy, and I like that about him.
I agree with you. But you know, don't nobody get their credit till they do it in the postseason.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because the last time we saw Sabonis in a 7-game series, we saw
it was thrilling. Green. Exactly. Yeah. Came out on the wrong side of that. So,
and look, I said it with Sam Amick last week. Sabonis sends a limo for Anthony Davis every time he sees him. Make sure he gets his ass on time. Feed him his best pregame meal, because I'm going to wear his ass out. And then Draymond Green says, hey, that limo, send that for Sabonis and make sure. Send it back. Send that Uber back. That Uber black back. Make sure he gets here, because I'm going to punk him. Like, that is the craziest. Like, the matchups are crazy. Now, the third part of that deal, Monica, that we haven't talked much about, is San Antonio getting Harrison Barnes in that three-team trade. And they got Chris Paul to pair with Big Slim. I'm trying to figure out if San Antonio's got something cooking and we're just not paying attention yet. Because you got two good vets over there with Big Slim. And Big Slim, in these little snippets that I've been seeing of what France has been doing here, looks like his game has been growing even more.
First of all, did you see the video of the France players juggling?
I just saw that like maybe last night. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, they're coming for us. Let me tell you, sitting down for draft interviews, Richey is not the best English, although he has really good, I wish I could speak two languages, he had really good English. So it was Alex. Alex Starr said to me, I'm like, on the circuit, you know, playing with all these guys, like, you know, what do you dream of? He's like, basically taking over international ball and all of us playing on the same Olympic team. And I'm like, we are on the clock. Because not these babies dreaming about it, and they all are like miniature versions of Victor, and then of course there's actually Victor. Well, chop chop, Team USA, chop chop.
Hey, look, that's why you had to bring the Avengers out this year, because this may be the last year of said Avengers.
I literally was like, Endgame style, truly. Like, what's happening?
Does that make him Thanos? We're gonna snap his fingers.
Listen, I mean, I'm sure if you and I sat here for, what are we, 2024? For 2028, we could think of five jumbo-sized French-born players that will qualify to, you know what I'm saying? Like, so that will make him the Infinity Stone, and he's going to have the prototypes around him. Okay, but let me backtrack, because we're going to deal with it now.
And that's in Los Angeles? Do you know the amount of pressure that will be on the United States?
Bro.
Baby.
Like, bro. And like, you're on the ground. The rumor, at least as we were preparing for draft, is like France is becoming a hub in terms of developing these young guys. So you know we're gonna get the 13-year-old prodigy that left the US to go to France, and one of his parents has 0.4 French blood, and now he's like a French national citizen who really should be playing for us, but gonna be playing for them. Like, what?
Reverse Embiid. That's what we're going to have. We're going to have a reverse Embiid.
100%. Paris going to be like America's trash anyway. Come on, let's go. Like, are you kidding me?
See?
So this is going to be interesting to watch. I've very much been like, I might need to tap in with Babbel and at least learn a little bit of French for the first three draft picks for the next however many years long outside of Cooper Flag.
Look, man, America has work to do. Not just the U.S. basketball national team, the AAU circuit, the mm-hmm. grassroots basketball had better get it in order.
Yeah.
You don't want your game to be taken over. You know what I mean?
Now, it's funny because this came up one time on Around the Horn, and our producer was like, ah, let's do that again, Mom. We don't really want to go there. And so I immediately was like, I DM'd KD because I'm like, bro, like, I didn't think it was a big deal. His response was, they always make more of this international game, but if that was truly the case, the NBA would really be taken over, right? And he's like, international players still come here to play. So, like, and so I get it. Like, we sat down with the numbers, but it feels, to go back to our feels and the perspective. And I just think the mind-blowing nature of Victor in particular has you looking like, so I hear what you're saying, but parlez-vous français?
I think I heard that with the Stevie Wonder record. I think I know what you meant.
So, but anyway, back to all the way back around the barn. Chris Paul, Harrison Barnes. Let me tell you this. I love Devin Vassell. Like, I think as most of us who have watched and been fans of Pop and watched the Spurs through their dynastic years, lots of head-scratching moments this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Devin Vassell. And I think Jeremy Sochan was put in a tough spot, right?
Yes, he was.
I know plenty of folks are like, why don't Cisco pass the ball? But like, like I think it was a lot going on there.
You say Cisco, I'm thinking Juntao.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I haven't heard that name in forever. That's funny. That's such a great movie. I can see Juntao too. I think, which one has more? We got to put a poll out. Juntao or Cisco, which player are we referring to at the San Antonio Spurs?
We got John. Fix that up.
Like which one do people get first? But Juntao is actually on point, 100%. Push the button! Push the damn button! Anyway.
That's how Monica is jet lagged. This thing is going all off the rails. It is going off the rails early. No,
such a great movie.
I do think, for those who don't know, we're talking about Rush Hour, the first Rush Hour. Chris Tucker, Jackie Chan, all that stuff. Like, that's almost 30 years old, Monica.
Is it? Ooh.
Just to make you feel old. Because I think it came out
in 97. Well, Cisco's in that same age range.
That's true. Are we old?
We both need, right, we need.
We old.
Not us. Not us being the problem. Not Jeremy Sochan being Jeremy Sochan to the young folks, and there's no comp.
It's our only comp is 1998, Unleash the Dragon, or Juntao. Like, what are we doing here, y'all? we can't find them. Wow. We didn't even say Dennis Rodman. We said...
I literally was like, who has the tennis ball head that has done color since those two people? Dennis Rodman, okay. But it's really, like, not a thing like that anymore.
Didn't Kuz do, like, the blonde hair
Kuz
thing
did
for a minute?
You know, Kuz is high fashion and, like, Winnie and, like, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oh, wow. But, like, pop culture reference, I don't have one. No, there's no rapper or singer with a... San Cisco.
Because if it was a rapper that was doing that... Well, put it like this. If there was one rapper who would do that...
Wait, I got an answer.
Okay.
Bear with me, folks, for problematic references. But didn't Kanye have a bald head a blonde head for a stretch?
I think he did. I think
for a stretch.
He did.
I know we're not going to do that reference, but
that's one that pops
to mind.
It's okay. What I was going to say was a certain Canadian who was getting made fun of on the daily, on social, and everywhere else. And I feel like he would, if anybody would do that, it'd be his appropriating ass. You know what I mean?
I can see that.
And we would make fun of him endlessly. And Kendrick would make another track. And I would just play it endlessly. I would love it.
How does he recover from this?
I think he leans into the pop stuff. He can't go back to being like regular old rapper because nobody... Rapping is authentic. Hip-hop is authentic. Being a pop star, you can just be a pop star and be plastic. Right?
Yeah, and I think the thing about it... And I'm not going to act like I'm in the streets in terms of diss tracks and battles. But when it comes to Kendrick, L.A., the art, he's not taking any shortcuts.
Nope.
So he's above... like, what do you even say to get back at him? Like...
You're short. Give me push-ups. Bro, you got to come with something better than that, Chief. Your kid ain't yours. Ah, my kid and my girl's in the video.
Like...
Hater-proof. Hater-proof.
Yeah. Like, ooh. Much like the San Antonio Spurs now with Chris Paul at the point guard position.
Hater-proof. There we go. That's how we circle it back. And speaking of, you know, because nobody wants to hear from Drake, this is how I can finish it off. Nobody wanted Miles Bridges. That's why he wound up signing with the Charlotte Hornets for $375 million. I feel like they signed him so they could trade him later, because it doesn't feel like that you would want to necessarily start your whole new regime with somebody who was viewed as problematic. We can just leave that shit right there, right? Because we got other stuff to hit with Monica McNutt, right? Monica, before we get into the war of World War III that we are experiencing online, the daily World War III. Look, man, it's not two Americas. It is like it is a bigger clash than the clash we got coming in November, because these two people are young and they talking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But Monica,
young and talking. Low bar.
Right. I know. John is losing his mind over there. John is like, what is getting cut out? What is getting sent to the bosses? What is John just pushing away from the table? And like, Vinny just said that on his own. I ain't got nothing to do with it. Right. But Monica, ever since you went viral with, you know, your interaction with Steve on First Take, and everybody knows about that. Mm-hmm. You went on with Bomani, of course, and then you went on The Daily Show. Tell me about this meteoric rise of Monica McNutt as WNBA evangelist, I feel like. I feel like you are preaching the good word. That's what I feel like.
It's honestly, Vinny, it's been kind of weird. Because I just felt like the whole thing started by saying water is wet, which is like still very odd to me, but whatever. Then the second part of it is, I think I am, shout out to a friend of the pod, friend of ours, Jemele Hill, like Angela Rye, like the women that are actually having real political conversations, because I'm like, all I said was, like, respect everybody else, and now all of a sudden I'm racist? Like, oh my God. What's happening? I have said since day one that my Rookie of the Year campaign is going to be directly attached to who can put their team in the standings. And when the question comes up on various days, look at the standings, and I answer accordingly. It has been Caitlin. It has been Angel. But goodness gracious, like, and the amount of stuff in my mentions from people that I know do not care about women's basketball, but I'm the race baiter, but you're talking to me about race, that, and I've been covering women's basketball for however long. It's a little bit exhausting, but I am finding renewed stamina and energy, because I do think that the conversation is finally moving to the basketball level.
Yes, yes.
Outside of, like, just ignoring my mentions, like, whatever. And so I have been grateful for the platform. I've been so grateful for the people. It's been weird for the people that are like, oh, you got Stephen A. I'm like, it was a debate show. We debated, like, that's that. But for the people that are true women's basketball fans that have been like, yo, thank you for saying what needs to be said. Like, just thank you for using your voice. I feel that. I receive that. And it's not that we're not welcoming a new audience. It's not that we can't have a conversation about Rookie of the Year. But I think for me to go through this conversation and act as if we don't live in America in which race is part of the conversation, it's just to do the whole conversation a disservice, right? Like, and so when it trends a way that I feel like needs to be brought back, I'm happy to bring in a little bit of levity, but also very happy to talk about the basketball of it all. And Caitlin Clark is damn good. Like, and I've never said she wasn't. You know what I mean? Angel Reese has been hella impressive. Both are doing historic things. And so when you look at this Rookie of the Year thing, to me, it's just, what do you value? And we know, as sports consumers, offense gets a ton of praise compared to defense, right?
Right.
And that's fine. Caitlin's offense, the first triple-double as a rookie, she's been trending upward, especially since Indiana had a chance to come off that crazy schedule to start the season. What Angel is doing, breaking a double-double streak as a rookie, you feel her presence defensively, like, that also has impact. And yep. So it's up to you as an objective fan or consumer to decide where you place your value. But I think for me, I'm talking to the people that can respect what both of them are doing. I'm not talking to people that have already made up their mind one way or another, because you're just trying to just be divisive.
Right. Now, see, it's funny because I want to talk about the basketball of this, right?
Uh-huh.
I want to start with Angel Reese, because I wasn't sure what type of pro she would start off being. I think they've both been better pros quicker than I could have anticipated watching them. And I'm guessing that's because the college game is more analogous to the pro game than college basketball in the NBA is analogous to the NBA game. But even beyond that, the Teresa Weatherspoon effect for Angel Reese, I think, is something a little understated, because Teresa Weatherspoon had fans in New Orleans and were really disappointed when the Pelicans did not bring her back. And that wound up being a Chicago Sky's game. Like, the fact that she's able to harness Angel Reese and Kennedy Carter in their passion and everything else, like, I feel like we need to discuss that a little bit more.
Teresa Weatherspoon is an icon of the women's game. And I think, again, like, welcome aboard all the new folks. But 1996 Olympic team, 1997, formative years of the league, Teresa Weatherspoon was the first player that I argued with my dad about, because he felt like she was a hot dog. And I was like, Dad, she's competing. Like, she's backing it up. She's energizing her team. Like, I remember that argument with my dad. And not, like, not contentious, but it was the first time I think my dad and I clashed over a basketball player. Because, Vinny, when I tell you, I was like, Dad, I got to go home because the Sparks played the Liberty at 3:30 on ABC. Like, I'm not missing. Like, the first 4 years of WNBA, I was like, I got games to watch. And, of course, my dad is like, okay, you're learning and growing. So my parents really supported me in that. But I think to know a little bit about Spoon's path as a player, as a coach, as a person, and if you ever have a chance to tap in, she posts various clips on her Instagram or has her team do it, I guess, to just listen to her in terms of the way she is fueled by purpose. Mm. And not that Christy Sides or any other coach may not be fueled by purpose, but I think for us in the game, the various roles that Spoon has had and the basketball lives she's lived, now to have her hands on a generational talent in Angel Reese to basically rehab Kennedy Carter, whose reputation preceded her negatively prior to this point. It is so perfect. And Angel actually talked about this the other day when she found out she became an all-star, how she had, like, prayed to God that she would fall to Chicago. And so there is a grit and connection that Spoon and Angel and Kennedy have in terms of their style, but also their willingness to work. And I think that's what's kind of lost in all of this. Like, yeah, all of the fantastic things that have been in addition to the core of basketball, but those young women are willing to work, and they are working for her at a high level.
For those who don't know, was it the 98 W Finals, I feel like? Was it 98 or 99? The half-court shot?
I think it was 8.
It was in Houston. And I feel like, if my memory serves me, and this is, let me go way back in the crates, Tina Thompson, I think, hit like some turnaround shot with like a second and a half left.
Tina Thompson.
And then Teresa just went right up the baseline. It was like they had the confetti out. I feel like they literally threw the confetti out.
The confetti was falling. She hit that shot.
And everything just froze.
Oh.
Like, just as a competitor, like, the whole house was like, oh.
Yes.
I remember that. I can't remember what happened last week, right? But you tell me, about, like, something happened in 1998, like, that's how weird my memory is. But she is such a great competitor. And I think in that same line, Angel Reese, like, even the rough parts of her game that have not smoothed out yet, the fact that she's relentless has carried her through 100%. All of this. Through
100%.
All of this. Like, she has a motor that you thought, some people said college motor. She got a pro motor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's to me, and that's like, because I'm with you. It was kind of like, how's that going to work? What position she's going to play? Her stamina, her conditioning, her athleticism even, I think was underrated. Because she's doing it against grown women. She's still able to do it against grown women. And so that's a level of conditioning that either between the time she left LSU and got to the W, she had a chance to ramp up, or we just were to our mistake, we didn't appreciate how much energy she had in college.
I feel like we underestimated that. Probably because the team was so good.
That, and because, like, in college, you look at it like, oh, Chuck and Duck, girl, please, you can't do that at the next level. Like,
right.
And I'm not, she, to me, if I'm Angel, I'm watching Nafisa Collier, who's dealing with a foot thing. Now, Fee has a level of smoothness naturally that I don't know that Angel will necessarily be able to recreate. But in terms of doing it at a high level, slightly undersized, Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah,
that's
I can see it. Yeah, 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 yeah. No, I can see that. And now we go to Caitlin Clark, where I don't get too wrapped up in the turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, like, part of it is like a two-edged sword, right? You got to catch the ball, and sometimes you got to throw passes that you know your teammates can catch. So I feel like there's an adjustment there. Like, when I see the turnover numbers, oh, she got 8 turnovers of 7. Like, Magic Johnson was like, hey, man, I'm going to keep throwing it, so you're going to have to catch it. Yeah. Not saying Magic, but you get what I'm saying just as far as the mindset of a point guard. She's really started to ramp it up. Like, the shooting, I feel like, has gotten better. I feel like she's gotten better at creating space. And I feel like little by little, it's been like, okay, we're starting to respect her a little bit more. Not we, but I feel like from a competition standpoint, like, she's earning it a little by little every game.
I would say the same thing of Caitlin. Her conditioning and stamina has impressed me. And strength, frankly. Because those were the things that you looked at both of them and were like,
Grown right? women.
Yeah,
grown women against you.
And I think, and again, like, it's just what do you value? Angel's largely banging 4s and 5s, definitely grown women. But Caitlin, through the matchup with Chicago 2 weeks ago-ish, had seen the most double teams in the league, right? Like, and also grown women on the perimeter. And so I'm with you. Yes, even she would say she'd like to get the turnovers down. But I think the other part, too, that you got to step back and look at with them, Indiana had a crazy schedule to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
Any new point guard on a team is going to have an adjustment period because you have to learn one another, right? Now you add into the mix that this is a rookie point guard, got to give it room to marinate, got to give it time to cook. And then three, as I've watched Indiana as of late, even if you put 5 vets together, but they like to move off the ball and cut, it's going to take a minute because cutting is you in the way until I learn your game.
Right. You don't know the pass is coming. You don't know the pass is coming. You don't know you're open.
So now, first foundational piece, Caitlin and Caitlin and Angel. Caitlin and Aaliyah, excuse me, starting to cook in that pick and roll.
Yep.
Kelsey Mitchell now knows how to come to the ball, and Caitlin is now picking up where to find her. Timmy Fagbenlay, who I think people are not super familiar with, but very versatile as a 4-5 and a competitor. Like, all right, now I know how to, I got to get my hands ready to catch these passes from Caitlin. Melissa Smith finally turning a corner in terms of her engine. She's a player that has a big-time engine and sometimes doesn't always tap into her max potential. I actually think, Vinny, that Indiana has a good chance to be solidly in the postseason, like not fighting for the 8th seed. And for me, if they are 7, that's going to be runaway in terms of rookie of the year, even if Angel continues like that. We looked it up yesterday during the game. 28 is the most double-doubles in the season. Alyssa Thomas had it last year. She also set the record for triple-doubles last year, so by default, it's double-doubles too. Angel already has 13. Now, that will also be historic if she's able to track that.
Right.
But if she tracks that and they're 9, 8, Caitlin and pulls them into 7, you know what I mean? And I've always said, for me, one of my bigger metrics on this rookie of the year conversation is going to be how do you impact winning, and it's just hard to debate that.
Absolutely. Look, and I think you made a great point a few minutes ago when you said, now we're actually finally getting to basketball. Like, the idiots will be the idiots regardless. They will drag the conversation where they want to drag the conversation no matter what. But the people who are in this for the basketball, the people who are in this to be entertained and also, man, they are both really good. I feel like we are starting to trend toward, maybe it's inching toward, Monica, the conversation about, oh, these two can be like Magic and Bird. Like, these two can help elevate the game. Are you starting to see it, or do you feel like we're still too much in the Twitter muck of all of this?
We got to just not look at Twitter is where I'm at. Because, yes, right? I think the conversation, I know I've been a part of great hour-long, 30-minute-long WNBA countdown shows, right? Like, I know I've been a part of great game calls, and we've had great game calls. Their Chicago Sky-Indiana Fever matchup, I think, is still our highest-rated WNBA game on ESPN. It was a great game. Like, it was a great game. Like I said to you earlier, we are not talking to the people that have already made up their minds on the extreme, on one side or the other. I don't have energy for you. Like, you took a whole lot of energy to get to your extreme position. And if anybody complimenting the other player is an affront to who you back, like, that's your problem. Because we want the people that can appreciate what they are both doing.
Right. Well, look, I want to say this because, you know, Monica about to get married and we throwing flowers and all this other stuff. But between you and Andrea Carter, who I've never met, but I'm a huge fan of her work, L. Duncan, who I've never met, like really never met, like, you know, men at NABJ, but not really kicked it with like that. And Amina Smith. And I know Amina's just like a sports center, but Amina has like a huge basketball knowledge. Y'all are bringing it. Like legit bringing it at whatever platform that you guys are being displayed at and lifting up the conversation. And I think that is really, really, really dope.
Thanks, Vinny.
I just
that's a good group of women to be in company with. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like. Look, love Dr. Give Love too. You know what I mean? Like, Monica might think I'm hard, you know, Monica might think that I'm like Mr. Freeze. If she's over there as the Riddler, she probably thinks I'm Mr. Freeze. I ain't that bad, I promise.
You do have a heart. It does pump actual blood.
As long as it don't pump Kool-Aid, we good, baby. That's what we
got. There we go.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is Monica McNutt. No matter what she changes her name to, she will always be Monica McNutt on this here podcast. Monica, I appreciate you giving us some of your time. I know we will talk formally many times before, you know, your nuptials, but let me congratulate you on this here public platform.
Thanks, Vinny. We're excited. It's crazy, too, like the amount of fans that are like, congrats on your wedding. I'm like, oh, thanks, guys. I'm going to set up a GoFundMe if you want to donate. It's expensive.
Hey, I'm about to say, what was the girl who was getting married like 20 years ago and everything was my wedding, and everybody was just like giving her stuff? Was it Star Jones or somebody?
Star Jones, yeah.
Was it Star Jones?
Now, I'm not going to hold you any part. I literally said to my PR, I was like, look, I really don't care about like publicity. I'm trying to get stuff for free. So in hindsight, we got behind the eight ball a little late on that, but it's all good. It's going to be amazing.
Monica has to still send me her address so I can send her a nice wedding gift to her. And
yeah, come on, insider, senior writer. I need that senior writer gift.
Monica, you got multiple jobs. We do not need to compare such things. We're going to leave. Monica got them glasses that she got on as courtesy of, you know, look, y'all, Monica know what she's doing. That's all I'm going to say. My homie know what she doing, okay?
We do nothing. We're like LeBron out here. We do nothing, happenstance.
Oh, no, LeBron said, hey, man, I didn't even know nobody was getting drafted. I ain't even know we was drafting him, who was drafting him, none of that. So, yeah, there
and the
go.
Lie detector says...
That was a lie. And that is the truth. Monica McNutt, appreciate you, Monica. Congratulations on everything. Thank you for giving us just a few minutes of your time this afternoon, Monday, whatever the hell time it is.
It's all good. Thanks, Vinny.
Love you.
Love you, too.
We're going to pay some bills, and we'll be right back with more from The Good Word. Welcome back to The Good Word. I am in Las Vegas with Team USA before they head to Paris for the Olympic Games. Of course, they're going to Abu Dhabi right after this to play some exhibition games. They're going to play Canada here in Vegas on Wednesday. I had a chance to sit down with a few players. Namely, first off, Kevin Durant, who's now sidelined with a minor calf strain, but he had some interesting thoughts on being at these Olympic Games, the transition of power between he and Anthony Edwards, and his career as a whole in regards to trade rumors. Katie, this is your fourth Olympic Games. Will this be your last?
Somebody just asked me. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just going to enjoy this one, stay in the present, have some fun along the way, you know? We'll see.
Do you feel like this one is a little different than the previous ones just because of the star power, the expectations, you know what I mean?
Nah. I ain't gonna lie. There's expectations every time we step on the court. We can't lose a game, you know, no matter who's on the team. So I think expectations is always going to be there. I mean, it's definitely a deeper team than I think I've played on, deepest team I've played on since I've been with USAB. From top to bottom, everybody is the guy on their team, you know? I think we had a lot of the last Olympics, we had a couple younger, you know, role players in the league that grinded their way up in camp and got that opportunity, which was cool. But they wasn't like the best players on it. You know what I'm saying? Like these guys are Hall of Famers, all-star, you know, so I'm excited about this. You know, I think the experience of 21 helped the culture of USAB and what type of team we need to be if we want to continue to dominate. And I think we're bringing that into this group, which is going to be fun.
Will it be different playing with Steph, playing for Steve Kerr? Just the dynamic, the familiarity that you guys have. Do you think it'll be any different?
Nah, I think it'll be a seamless, easy transition since we did it before. You know, I know what Steph likes the ball. I know his game. He knows my game. Steve knows my game as well, and I know what he wants out of his players too. So I think it'll be easy.
Now, last time we saw you, you guys were playing Minnesota in the first round. You and Ant were going back and forth.
Yeah.
It seemed like you appreciate that part, that moxie from someone like that because you were once in his position.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it ain't just because it's Ant. Like, you make a couple good plays and, you know, that's just the nature of the game is to, you know, have that dialogue, you know. Communication is all, we always talking on the floor. So, and I respect that at players who come out there and, you know, they say something, they're going to prove it. And that's what he did in that series. He played his ass off, you know. And he gained so much respect. We always have respect for him, but just went to another level just playing against him and seeing him compete. And when we both competing for something, you know, that's important, you know. So, yeah, I respected it. I couldn't say much back, but just try to go down there and do my thing.
I mean, there was once upon a time, not that long ago, you were the young guy that was – coming for the crown. And is there a part of you that kind of respects the circle of life in a way, somebody kind of trying to take it from you?
Yeah, I just know how that stuff goes. It's like no taking nothing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can meet me there. You know what I mean? You can, like, get to that level. But it's like you can't take what I've done from me, you know? Mm-hmm. You can beat me in a game, you know, in a series or something. That's cool. But, right. You know, the stuff that I've acquired since being in this league, like, you could just match it. And I think Ant's going to be one of those players that's going to match it. Like, instead of, like, saying, I took something from Kobe. What can I take from the greats, like, that already accomplished anything? So it's more so just, like, wanting to be on that level that they were on. And Ant is a student of the game, and he's a sponge. He got a high IQ. I didn't realize that, too. He got a high IQ for the game. So he's going to be on that level. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say he's, like, taking anything from anybody. I think he's just putting that work every day.
We can say that you took a torch from Kobe.
Nah, I didn't take anything. Kobe?
When you beat somebody in the playoff series.
That don't mean shit, because he got five champs. It didn't mean nothing. We lost that year. We didn't win the championship that year. So, want to celebrate a second round win because it's Kobe Bryant?
Yes.
Nah.
that's what it is.
I ain't have him on that pedestal like that. You know what I'm saying? I don't got the, like, once we on the same court playing against each other, like, it's just another win. It's cool. Like, when y'all said, like, damn, you beat Kobe Bryant. But I don't even think about shit like that. You know what I'm saying? I know how tough it is. And the only win that matters is the last one. You know? So, and I think that's what the approach Ant got to it. Like, yeah, it's cool that you beat somebody that you've been watching when you was a kid. But after that was over, I guarantee you he pissed more about losing to Dallas. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, he not walking around and say, well, we beat KD and them, though.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, like, yeah. I don't even think he on that type of, time, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's what NBA, you know, people don't realize about NBA players. Like, these dudes only care about winning that last game.
Now, you guys haven't won the last game since you've gotten to Phoenix. There's been some talks, some turmoil, whatever you want to call it. Do you pay attention? Were you online on draft night when everybody was saying?
Yeah, Cam, it's hard not to hear what they got to say about you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, because especially then you could just make up lies. Like, everybody going to believe you. Like, you could just press the KD want to leave button anytime you want some attention.
You like, think it's a button?
Yes. It's a for sure a button. What else is going to get people going around this time? Besides, the journey, man, is leaving again. That storyline gonna always hit, you know, the people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's why they send you the alerts on ESPN on your phone. Oh, KD's thinking about leaving. That's how big that story is, which is whack. Because I'm talking to Phoenix every day, since the season ended. Right. Like, our GMs, coaches, everybody, we've been locked in. So it's like to hear somebody say, well, Phoenix wants to get out of the KD sweeps. I'm sitting there like, where is this coming from? So yeah, I don't. It bothers me that people lie like that, and it bothers me that the audience eats up lies. Not necessarily the headline, because I know it's false, and I know the relationships. But I get sad when people buy into lies or just make up. It's bigger than ball at that point for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And but I can't control that. You know, I feel for people. I don't want you to even like,
yeah,
you know, because that's a bad practice to have when you just believe anything, for one. When you just believe whatever you see on TV. And then it's another bad habit when you just lying. You know what I'm saying?
And it takes away from, I would suppose, like just the aesthetic of the game. Like watching you play, if that's the first thing in someone's mind is, exactly, where's KD going next?
That's exactly.
Or every body language, you know what I mean?
I'm like, don't let that blind you from like what I'm doing on the basketball court. Because that could irritate you as a fan. I'm like, damn, this motherfucker leaving again? But it's like, yo, I ain't even like, even if I do lead, am I playing good basketball though? Like, what matters? Does it matter that I got a jersey on? Or is it like the basketball I'm playing? So that's some of that stuff get frustrating, because I want better for the fans. I want them to enjoy the experience. But when you're thinking about narratives and lies like that,
that's the game nowadays.
Yeah, it's like damn, our game is way more pure and more beautiful than that. You know, they try to look past that and focus just on the game.
Right.
Like, some of this stuff is out of your control, and some of this shit is just lies.
So, you've been a champion, and nobody can take those away from you. How much does winning another one mean to you? Or is it about playing the game at the way that you want to play it, with people you want to play it? You know, not taking away, I don't want to win again, but where does that desperation rank for you?
There's a lot of things factoring why I want to play the game of basketball or why I keep playing. And obviously winning every game I play is important. Playing with good people, playing the right way, that's important. Being at the top of my game, that's important. Like, there's a lot of stuff that factor in to why I keep playing the game of basketball. So, yeah, of course I want to win the championship. Of course I want to play well every game. Like, I don't even have to talk about that type of stuff. But, yeah, so, you know, it's fulfilling getting up to play every day. And then whatever happens on top of that, it's cool.
It could be frustrating not winning.
Of course, but that's the beauty of being in this. It's gonna be that ebb and flow. But when you get out of it and you understand what you went through and you can look back on some shit and really appreciate that grind, that's the beauty of sports, professional sports. It ain't gonna always be like that. You know what I'm saying? You win, play 82 games. You play 100 games sometimes. You ain't winning 100 games.
Yeah.
You know, so it's gonna be ebbs and flows, and that's the beauty of it.
Last question for you. You hitting a milestone birthday coming up soon.
36.
You're not going to see it. That means you're in your late 30s. You're no longer in your mid 30s.
You're right.
How much longer do you want to play? Will you stop playing when I'm no longer Kevin Durant, the 30-point scorer? Will you be happy being a role player? Like, what will determine that for you?
I'm a role player. I've been a role player.
When?
I always played a role. My whole career, my whole life. That's why I'm so good at basketball, because I know how to my role. You may need me to do this one time. One possession, they may need me to do that. I may need to bring the ball up. I may need to guard the best player. I may need to hit a three. So I can tap in and roll at any time. Am I going to play? It's about how many minutes, how many shots I'm going to get. And I'm cool with, I just love to play the game. Like I said, if it's a good situation, I'm still enjoying the game of basketball. My goal is to play this shit till the wheels fall off, whatever role that is. You know what I'm saying? So we'll see.
Next up, it is the babyface assassin, Stephen Curry, four-time NBA champion, two-time MVP. His first go run at the Olympics, we talked about that. His relationship with LeBron James and the departure of Klay Thompson and his own personal future with the Warriors. Here with first-time Olympian, Stephen Curry. Steph, for someone your age, you know, at this stage of your career, what does being in the Olympics for the first time mean to you?
Oh, it means everything. That's why, you know, I was so excited and honored to have the opportunity to do it. Conversations kind of started last fall, you know, after the struggles for the world championship team, which it happens. The world's getting better. We started talking about, you know, who would want to commit to, you know, this journey. And the stars had to align, obviously. Like, there's been 2 years well, maybe no, just the 1 year in 2016 where I wasn't physically right to go play. And then 21, I can't really remember why I didn't, but just to have this opportunity, like you said, the first time, it's one of those things that having a first, it gets you, you know, you feel like a kid again. And, you know, get the jitters before the first practice, and I'm sure I'll have it before the first game, and having the full Olympic experience. So it means the world, and I'm excited to be here.
Is it different doing this experience as a made man? Like, you did the Worlds in 14, but you had a great year going into that, but you weren't a four-time champion, a two-time MVP. Do you walk into the building feeling a little different amongst your peers, knowing that you're so accomplished?
That just means age. Like, because you see, like, even the guys on the select team, you know, they're in the same shoes I was. Actually, when I played on the 2010 World Championship team, I didn't play much. I played maybe 4 to 6 minutes a game if the team was playing zone and they needed a shooter out there. And the 2014 was another step. I think I just made All-Star for the first time that year. But, yeah, like you said, it was just – we're still obviously proving yourself and trying to come into your own as a, you know, perennial All-Star. Hopefully we win the championship that next year. But I think this is different just because of how people kind of perceive me. It's not me and how I perceive myself. It's how people talk about me or to me. And, you know, got young guys asking for advice. And, you know, guys, all you, I watched – Edwards is 22 years old, like, he watched us when he was a kid, so now he's on these teammates with him. So it's just a different perspective. I don't perceive it as because I'm a made man or anything. It's just, we still have something to prove this year because there's a lot on the line. So be able to push that off and just play basketball and hoop.
What's going to be more awkward, having LeBron as a teammate for an extended period of time or not having Klay Thompson as a teammate?
No, not having Klay, man, it still hasn't really sunk in. Just because you've been doing it for 13 years together. And, you know, coach made a joke. He's like, sometimes you can't really find Klay in the off seasons and you don't really hear from him as much. And then he shows up at training camp ready to go. I kind of have this idea that in October he'll still like, no, hey guys, what's up? Like, but I know it's not happening. So that'll sink in a little bit once the training camp starts. But, you know, having Bron as a teammate, it's like surreal because you have so many battles back and forth. You admire his game, you know what he's about, and to see the work up close and personal every day, to see how, you know, he prepares, how he talks in practice. Like, I've never had that vantage point of him, so just excited to see how our games complement each other and you know, build that chemistry that's going to help lead this team.
I would assume your relationship has had to evolve. You and LeBron's relationship has had to evolve from when you first arrive on the scene as a contender and he's been there, there's some friction. And I feel like maybe now, as you guys are sort of on the back end of it, your relationship, I would assume, has gotten better and will get better.
The relationship started off great at the beginning. Not to say it was bad at any point, but it was great when I was
in NCAAs, right?
Exactly. And he came to a couple games and then he invited me over his house my rookie year before we played Cleveland. And he's been in Akron. Like I said, some of the final stuff. And obviously in the finals, that brings out the healthy animosity of somebody standing in your way of a goal. And you know you're going to have some bad blood out there. But through it all, like, I'm a firm believer you can be competitive. You can, you know, have that killer instinct and see blood on the other side, but still have the utmost respect for who you're playing against. And that's the ultimate compliment for a guy like Bron, who's always pushed the bar, you know, higher and higher with everything that he's done. So to now be in a situation where we're still in the same conference, they beat us in the playoffs last year, and like there's still that competition, but I can fully enjoy this experience and get to know him at a much deeper level as teammates. And I think that's what we both deserve at this stage in our career. It's pretty dope.
For sure. Like, at this stage, you brought up the championship in 22. You won one playoff series since then. The franchise has gone through a lot of different changes since then. How vocal are you about wanting to still be in the mix of the Western Conference? Like, teams are getting better. They're making bigger moves. You guys just lost a big piece in Klay Thompson. Are you content riding it out with the franchise, or will you put pressure on Golden State to try to stay there? Like, where do you sit as far as where your career is and maybe even seeing yourself in a different uniform?
No, I haven't gotten there at all. And it's funny just because the way that things happen, whether it's the big headline like Klay Thompson's going to Dallas and you probably haven't heard from me, and it's like this thing of, oh, does Steph want that or does Steph talk to the organization? Like, if you know basketball, you know how this works. Like, I know what's going on and I know all the ramifications of every decision. You know, I'm not making the decisions, but, you know, you want that collaborative kind of approach. Winning is hard in this league, man. And the fact that we've been able to do it for this long has been amazing. Trying to keep the core together this long has been amazing. Obviously, Klay is the first one to not be a Warrior. And so it's a different dynamic. I always want to win. Plain and simple, and there's no contentment on just cashing a check and playing basketball and riding it out. Like, pressure is applied on, like, I want to win and I want to be in the best position to make that happen. Doesn't guarantee anything, but until that changes and I feel that energy changes, then, you know, I go about my business the same way, and that's where I'm at.
Well, Steve said yesterday, we all want things to end a certain way, but it doesn't always. In that way, LeBron has switched teams. You've had Kevin as a teammate, not having him as a teammate. You see changes in professional sports. Do you want to be that person that says, I'm staying with one franchise for my entire career? Or is it just contingent upon where the franchise is?
Yeah, I mean, I can clearly say I want to be a Warrior for life. It's always been my goal. And I'm saying that sitting in this chair right now. But like you said, life and especially life in the NBA, it is a wild environment and things change quickly and the league has changed quickly. So we're trying to adapt and evolve. And until that, I'll let everybody know if that changes. But right now, like, of course, the goal is always to be to finish my career with one team.
We're back after both of those interviews. It's just interesting to me to listen to Kevin Durant, going to be 36 this year, still playing at a high level. I don't think there was necessarily anything strong to what was going on in Phoenix on draft night. Who knows what conversations they could have been having or whatever teams could have been having them with him. But he deserves to be on some level of good team. And I feel like teams in the Western Conference are passing him by. Same thing can be said for Golden State. I will warn everybody listening, especially if you're in Golden State and you're in management and ownership, do not take that man for granted. Don't think just because he's quiet publicly that he won't use some flex at some point if he feels like things are moving in the opposite direction. He's going to be 37, y'all. He's going to be 37 in March. There's not that much time left for him to be great at this level. So he's going to want to maximize that, maybe get to another NBA Finals. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen with Golden State. They at least got to try. And it doesn't look like they're trying right now. So that is the end of the show for today. Thanks again to Monica McNutt for joining us. Thanks, of course, to producer John and the entire team who works so hard behind the scenes. Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room on Thursday. I'll be back next week, hopefully, from the crib. Until then, everybody be safe.